Welcome to the Ultimate Farm Wife podcast. On this channel, we're going to be discussing all things marrying a farmer, moving to the land, and becoming integrated with a family farming operation. Whether you're moving to the farm for the first time, or whether you're moving back into a family farming operation, we discuss the ins and the outs of all of it. So let's jump into today's episode. Hi, and welcome to the farm. Today I'm talking with Katrina. You may recognize her from a previous episode when we were the rural mum. So very excited to have Katrina back on the farm. Previous interview in the description below for all of you who want to go back and have another listen. It is a great deep dive into family farming. So well worth a listen. Katrina, thank you for coming back. Please remind us all who you are, your family, and your farm.
Hi, Katja. Thank you so much for having me back again. It's lovely to be here. So just a quick little refresher on who I am. So Katrina Myers, back on our family's avocado farm. So predominantly avocados, but we also grow now a bit of cropping. We've got some barley in this year, about 500 acres of barley, some lucerne, some sheep, got a bit of teff. We're doing a bit of everything this year. Because water's around, so it's time to sort of, you know, make the most of that opportunity because we're an irrigation farm here. So we've been back here now on the farm for 13 years, close to 14 years now, with my husband, Tim, and myself, and we've now got four kids. So the oldest is 15, nearly 15 next week, and the youngest is six. So it's been a busy sort of 14 years with lots of, yeah, different add-ons and trying lots of new different things and, you know, we've developed and actually tripled the size of the avocado farm. And, yeah, it's been a roller coaster ride. And then I've sort of had my own business on the side of that as well, and we'll get into talking about all of the value-added things and all the fun things we've done throughout the interview, no doubt.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let's start with the avocados because I love avocados and you clearly love avocados. Now that you're back on farm, tell us how you went to triple the avocado farm, what that looked like, how you were able to increase productivity and the expansion of the grove that way.
Yeah, well, it's interesting actually, because when we came back, we looked at the different options. We started out really going for the direct markets. And we're like, okay, we're going to do farmers markets and we're going to do direct to, you know, cafes, restaurants, fruit and veg shops. And we're like, we're going to really focus on the more direct. But then over time, we really ended up going back to a more commercial model and actually going for more production. Tim was pretty adamant that we really needed to increase production to make money, you know. And also what we found was with the direct sales, it is a lot of work. Like and we had a young family, we had young babies, doing farmers markets every weekend when they're 3 hours away was really tough. And dealing direct with cafes and restaurants is also quite hard because chefs can be, you know, a bit picky to deal with, which is fair enough. They're dealing with hundreds of different products that they've got to manage, but it was quite hard. And then you're chasing up a whole range of invoices all the time. So we ended up sort of moving back to a much more commercial model and just selling through the wholesale market system with a little bit of add-ons still, like we still do a bit of online sales. And really it took a lot of capital investment to expand and to grow more avocados. And we had to borrow more money and it's been a lot of work and well, it's still quite hard because what happened was we expanded the orchard and we sort of developed it over the years. But then, of course, like every other avocado person in Australia and all these big corporates decided to do the same thing, which, you know, I'm not sure where they get their bloomin' research from, but don't we all know that if everybody goes and grows more, then, you know, there's going to be too many and then the price will drop. So we sort of have also followed that path, unfortunately. And so the last couple of years have been really tough with really low prices and we're still waiting for all of our trees to start producing because there is a lag with avocado trees. So we're in a bit of a tricky spot at the moment in terms of that growth phase, I guess. We're still 2 years off full production, but we are, fingers crossed, going to get good prices this year because we're just about to start harvest. Well, we've sort of started today on some of the smaller varieties and the prices are looking good. So we're hoping to get a good run on the board this year. We've got good yields, the prices are looking good. But yeah, it's certainly been a challenge, and developing the farm has taken a lot of capital and time investment, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Does avocados in Australia have like an overarching governing board like some of the other agriculture industries?
Yeah, so we've got Avocados Australia, so we pay the levies to Avocados Australia, who pay the levies to Hort Innovation. And look, Avocados Australia have traditionally been pretty good as a industry body, but, you know, it's always hard, these things. It is literally just a supply and demand, sort of a function of supply and demand. So, but the Avocados Australia have done a good job in promoting avocados, that's for sure.
Yeah. That's great to hear. And as part of the infrastructure increase, did you also go into some packing sheds?
Oh, yes. I forgot about the packing shed. So not only did we plant a lot of trees, but we also developed the packing shed. So when we first came back, we actually got a grant to develop the packing shed. So we built a whole new packing shed because the one that Mum was using was very rustic and very tiny. So we developed a big new packing shed. Unfortunately, we probably should have gone bigger. It's still like now we're like really at capacity with it. But that's been great. We put in a new packing line 2 years ago. So we used the old packing line for a while in the new space. And then a couple of years ago, we put in a new packing line as well. And so we've been packing some other growers' fruit the last couple of years and our own. And yeah, that's been good. It's been great to have that. I mean, we to and fro with that as well, to be honest. Like, do we keep packing our own fruit or do we outsource it? But it is really great to have that control of the packing line. I mean, the quality assurance and the auditing and all the logistics and all of that that goes with running a packing shed is a lot. But it's also nice to have that, you know, from a farm to wholesaler control over that production line. So that is good.
Yep. With the increase of the orchard size and the packing shed, how did you find the increase in employment? What are your strategies around employees and seasonal packers and all that sort of thing?
Yeah, so we just get backpackers in and we haven't had any trouble. I think there was 2 years during COVID where it was pretty tough. We really struggled. You know, there was just no one around, as everybody knows, and that was hard. We've always been lucky that we have a certain amount of local people that come back every year, and then we sort of top that up with backpackers. But the last couple of years, 2 or 3 years, it's just been great. There's backpackers everywhere. I don't even answer my phone anymore because I get so many calls from backpackers and I just can't answer them all. Just have a little message. And, you know, we've been lucky. We've been really lucky and we've had good staff, and which is a real testament to Tim and also Steph that works with us now as well. Like, they're great to work for, and everybody who works here, you know, it's a great place to work. It's a really lovely environment. Everybody loves it. Like, we've got, I think, about half a dozen of the backpackers are coming back this year. So they were here last year and they're all coming back. So, yeah, we've been really lucky. We have about 12 casual backpackers that come in for the season, and then we've got our 4 full-timers. So,
yeah. Amazing. Orchard and raising your family. Somewhere along the line, you've decided you're also going to do the Airbnb. Tell us about that, how it fits in with the avocado business and how everything works with it.
Yes. Well, the Airbnb, we've been running for 12 months now. So basically it was a second house on the farm. So when we moved back, we first lived in town for 5 years and Mum was still living in the house on the farm. And then she built another house, which is very cool because Mum has excellent, like, sort of style, and she loves to do funky kind of, you know, environmentally friendly houses. So the house is awesome. I'm sitting up there now for the interview, actually. And then she moved to Ballarat. So she moved to Ballarat about 4 years ago. And for a little while she was like, no, you're not doing anything with my house. It's my house and I don't want anyone in it. But then eventually we talked her into letting us Airbnb it because it's just another great asset on the farm. And as I said, avocados haven't been that good. So we're like, all right, well, what else can we do to maximise our assets? And the whole farm is now maximised. Let me tell you, we're doing everything we can. And the Airbnb was part of that. And, I mean, I love interior design. I love styling. And I always sort of wanted to expand the kind of agritourism side of the farm anyway. So it just really made sense and it all worked out. And it's been great. We've had it going for 12 months. And I did the Sarah Andrews hosting masterclass. And I love it. It's great. It's so fun. And I'm still working on really developing up the other agritourism, like developing the sort of product up more and the offering. It's been great for the first 12 months to get it out there and get it happening.
part of the Ultimate Farm Wife community who is had, you know, a secondary dwelling or another house on the farm, and they're wanting to get into, do I Airbnb it? Do I do something else with it? Where do they start on the trends?
Okay, so the first thing I would say is it's not as easy as it used to be. You can't just, like, set up a place and hope and pray that someone will come. Like, there's quite a lot to it. It really is like running a business. You've got to be working on your kind of your PR and your marketing, your social media. You've got to develop the story of the place. Like, there's quite a lot to it. But in saying that, it's worth it. I would just, if anyone wants to do it, I would just highly recommend going and doing Sarah's hosting masterclass. She is beautiful. She had the Captain's Rest down in Tasmania and it did so well. It's this gorgeous cottage down in Tasmania. And then everyone just sort of started asking her, like, how did you do it? And so she developed a course and then she put it online. And you can just tell anyone who's done her program, it's just like they're in a different class sort of thing, you know? And it's a whole experience. And so I just would say go and do her hosting masterclass. But it is it can be a really great second income. And also don't listen to all the negativity. Like, if you put out a good vibe and you have, you know, a beautiful offering, people respect it. I think we've had one lot of guests that was, you know, that left it a mess. Everyone else has been wonderful. So yeah, it's definitely, and especially if you've got that like little bit of a flair and you love interior design and you love doing, you know, creative things, it's a really great way to sort of do all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. For everyone who's listening along, I will add Sarah's link below to that workshop. I'm sure Katrina will send it through to me.
Definitely.
As well as the Airbnb. So you can see how beautiful it is and what a great job Katrina has done with developing her story and creating such a beautiful space. So I'll add that in the description below. When it comes to choosing a host site to book the accommodation through, like, am I choosing Airbnb? Am I choosing stays? Am I going to do just a private website? How did you narrow down what was going to work for you?
Yeah, so again, I started with Airbnb because, like, I know myself, if I'm traveling, I'll go to Airbnb. And it's easy. It's so easy to use from a host perspective. And it's great because you get the reviews of everyone, you know, and it's easy. They do take quite a percentage, but for me, it's worth it because of the insurance and all that kind of thing. So I started with them. And then I've also added on to booking.com, which is not as user friendly from the host perspective. It's good because it's, you know, it ranks high on Google. So if you're searching for a town, you know, it'll come right up there. So there is a little bit to choosing which platform to go on. I'm working towards really developing up my own site more. I've got a website, but I really want to start taking more direct bookings through that. Yeah. But again, a lot of work involved with that. But if you want to learn how to do all of that, Sarah Andrews is your woman because she just guides you through all of that side of it. But definitely, if you're just starting out, Airbnb is the place to do it. And yeah, it's, you can get caught up in paying for lots of different directories and all that kind of stuff, but the stats will show you that really Airbnb is where most people are booking through. When you're first starting out, it's definitely the best option.
Adding additional services or anything provided with the Airbnb, do you do anything on top, like food packages, or do you give them a beautiful avocado basket?
Yeah, so we do spoil our guests. Like, we do a local produce hamper for breakfast and they get avocados, and then we give them some of our merch, and we really try to go over the top with little treats and little extras. Mm-hmm. And all of that is just thrown in. But I am working on options for – we've just bought a pizza oven for the Airbnb, like one of those cool Gosney ones. Yes. So that then I'm going to be offering guests, you know, like, I'll make the dough for you and you can get the tomato sauce, and then you just bring your toppings and all that kind of thing. And I do also want to work towards offering kind of just meal suggestions, and, you know, we can buy the ingredients for you and it's there. But that sort of stuff will be more add-ons at a cost. But, yeah, I definitely do try to spoil guests with as much local produce. You know, we've got beautiful orange juice and there's, like, beautiful bacon and eggs and all that kind of stuff. It's all local. So, yeah, and I think people really appreciate that. I know myself, especially because we're way out of, you know, not way out, but we're 10 minutes out of town. You don't want to get here and there's nothing. You know, there's nothing worse than when you arrive at an Airbnb and there's not even any milk. So, yeah, we do definitely try to spoil guests like that. And I think that's what people really appreciate. So, yeah.
Absolutely. If you're enjoying listening along with us today and learning some tips, tricks, and advice, then please like, subscribe, and even share this interview with someone who you think would need to hear this information or who might benefit from other interviews done right here on this channel. Now let's get back into today's episode. And then on top of that, you personally have gone down a wonderful self-help deep dive into both yourself and what we can be doing as rural women. And you covered that on your podcast, The Rural Rockstar, which I will also link below. So tell me about the self-help journey and how that led to the meditation that you're doing, because you also sometimes do retreats.
Well, yes, I'm working towards retreats as well. So I'm pretty much finished my yoga teacher training as well. So I'm hoping to start running retreats, like sort of private ones or half day ones, all that kind of thing, because the place here is just perfect for that as well. Such a beautiful surrounds. So yeah, I teach meditation and I've almost finished my yoga teacher training. I've also just started doing my death walker training, which is like left field, but it's something that I feel really passionately about. It sort of ties in beautifully with the whole, you know, so many people struggle with death and dying and all those sorts of things. So I really want to sort of contribute in that area too. And yeah, that sort of stuff, the podcast, I haven't been doing as much work on the meditation side of it lately because I've been focusing on the Airbnb, but I'm really hoping that that will all come together soon once I can offer more of these packages and the retreats and that sort of thing. And I'm not doing the podcast anymore, but I still put out a weekly newsletter every week, which I love doing mainly just for fun at the moment, because I just love sharing. So it's a nice way to connect with people. It's been great.
The newsletter is through Substack. So do you mind if I share that in the comments section below?
Yeah, no, for sure. Go for it.
Awesome. You do such a good job at curating and putting everything together, and it's really well worth seeing it pop up in the newsletter, and it is one of the best ways to keep up to date with you and everything that you've got going. So, Katrina, balancing everything together, I mean, it's a lot of balls to have up in the air. How do you and your husband do it all?
Yeah, well, it's a lot of work, to be honest, but it's sort of like, well, I think that my well-being and my self-care is sort of like my hobby now in some ways. It's become a really, I guess it's crucial. It's the foundations for everything. So it's very much built into my daily life now. And I actually am very conscious and very aware of not being too busy now, because I know that it doesn't take much for the wheels to come off and, you know, into burnout. And I think most people are in some form of burnout at the moment. And so I am very conscious not to be like that. And it's meant that I've had to make different choices, like not to go back into full-time work. So, you know, being able to be available, because we do have four kids and Tim is flat out busy. And so that has meant some financial sacrifices as well, because it does make it harder. I mean, it'd be a lot, you know, financially it'd be much better if I was off doing a 9-to-5 job of some sort. But it also would mean that we're under a lot more stress and a lot more pressure. So it's been a real balance of that for us, and just a real awareness, and both of us taking very good care of our mental health and our physical health and daily exercise. You know, and I'm a big meditator, obviously, because I love meditation. I've even got Tim meditating now, which is awesome. It's only taken me like 10 years, but anyway, so that's been great. It is it's a conscious daily, you know, practice to keep on top of our mental health and well-being. And we've had some really, really tough times in the last sort of 12 months financially, and I think it's very important for us, and it has been very important for us. It doesn't mean we're not going to have crappy times and really hard times, but it means we can recover and get through those times much more quickly, which is really important. The recovery is very important.
Absolutely. So we even addressed this a little bit in, you know, the previous interviews that I have done with you. But for those who are tuning in who are new to the podcast and who are new to the Ultimate Farm Wife community, are you able to break down some of the advice and self-care methods that have really helped across the business and across your journey? Even share some of your, I've always wanted to ask this, some of your top self-care books, that, because it's definitely something we're not doing as rural women as often as we should be. So where are we going to go, you know, for the resources? What are your favourites?
Oh, my goodness, my top self-care books. Okay, I'll have to have a think about that one. But the things that I do every day is, and I would say this is really important for men too, is exercise. Yeah. So if nothing else, I mean, I know this is directed at women, but also, I mean, we all feel better when everybody's happy in the household, don't we? Get your husband exercising, and don't think that, oh, well, he's doing physical exercise all day, so that counts. It doesn't count. Just because you're working hard all day, that is not it. You got to go literally bike ride, running, weights, whatever it is that you can sort of enjoy, even just a walk, you know, for the blokes. But some sort of physical exercise, I can notice such a difference in Tim when he's exercising versus when he's not exercising. So that's really important just for the men and for women as well, and especially because I'm now in my 40s and in perimenopause. Strength training has sort of changed the way that I exercise quite a lot. It used to be a lot more sort of intense, a lot more running, I don't know, sort of strain, I guess, whereas now it's a lot more of that strength training, lots of yoga, love yoga, walking, you know, less running, all that kind of stuff. But daily exercise, meditation, obviously. And it's one of those things. It's like the easiest thing in the world to do, but it's also the hardest. And everyone's like, oh, I haven't got time to sit still. Well, if you haven't got time to do 10 minutes of meditation, you need to be doing 20, is what we say. And it's amazing the difference it can make, like getting up and starting your day with 10 minutes of meditation or even some breath work or something just changes the whole day, you know. And it's just like cleaning my teeth for me now. I couldn't not meditate. Like I haven't missed a morning meditation for 10 years, I don't think. I couldn't do it. I'm not sure what would happen. Maybe I'll self-implode if I don't do it. But, yeah, so, you know, and it doesn't have to be – I mean, people always say, oh, you don't have to do much, but you do have to do something. Like – it really is so important to be taking care of ourselves. And if you are on the bottom of your to-do list, then it just, life is hard, you know. And we should be able to prioritize going to bed earlier, doing some exercise, taking 10 minutes to do a meditation. If you haven't got time for all of that, then I can guarantee you're heading towards burnout. Like, there's just no doubt about it. There's no way you can manage life without doing something to take care of yourself. And I think we all kid ourselves that we can. Mm-hmm. Or we don't know, you know, like so many people are sort of just living unconsciously and just getting through the days and just everything's just so busy and so flat out and so hectic that there's not even those moments or those gaps to realise that we need to stop and take some time for ourselves. So I think that it's getting better, like everyone talks about self-care, but then doing it and actually doing it is a different thing. So in terms of my favourite books, I mean, there's so many, like, mainstream ones. Like, I love Brené Brown. She's amazing. I love Mel Robbins is always great. Like, she's some of her – not that I've really read her books as much, but I have loved her podcasts, yeah. Dip in and out of that. Dan Harris's 10% Happier. It's a podcast as well, not a book, but, you know, love that one as well. Atomic Habits, you know, the classics are just so good. But I would definitely – it depends what you're sort of – where you're at, but Brené Brown is just so good for, I just love her work in terms of sort of developing that awareness and understanding of yourself and leadership and self-leadership and all those sorts of things. She's great. And I'll have to get back to you on some more recommendations because honestly, my pile of books is like, I think I have 100 self-help books or something ridiculous. I'm trying not to read as many at the moment. I actually like, now I make myself read nonfiction before bed because I was just obsessed. And I'm like, no, you need to just switch off. Stop. So, yes, but I'll get you some of my favourites.
Absolutely. I always love hearing what you're up to, Katrina, and just loving how everything is fitting in beautifully and how the long-term planning. So, you know, I'm going to have these balls in the air, but they're going to come round to complement the avocados and the Airbnb and myself and my family and my business. And I love that holistic approach and the long-term approach to everything that you're doing. For the Ultimate Farm Wife community, Katrina, what would be your top tips, tricks and advice for value adding to your property? Where do we start? How do we make sure that we're doing the long-term and that we're actually going to implement them?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, I mean, the thing is, often people have lots of ideas and it's quite easy to have ideas. It's hard to execute them. And what I would also say with that is what I've learned, because I am a big ideas person and I love to go off and do these things, but Tim's he has been good for me in that he's much more like, okay, is that going to work? And I think I've got better at not just going off of whatever idea sounds good and doing it, because it's actually not that easy to value add. There's quite a lot to it and it takes a lot of work and often it takes a lot of money. Like there's lots of things that I would love to do with the avocados, but does it add up? Is it going to make money? At what cost? And so always asking those questions now is really, really important. And I think the big at what cost question has become crucial for me. Because, again, you know, you might think that it looks really great to go and do a value-add thing, but it's going to take you away from the family time even more, it's going to cost a lot of money, and actually it's not going to really add up to being you know, what you want it to be, and it's not going to really make extra money. But if you look at something and you go, well, actually, yeah, this is a great idea. It's going to be, you know, it's going to take time, but it will end up being really great. I've got the time. You know, I think I can manage it, then go for it. Because I do think that there is a lot in value adding, and it's definitely where if you can take back that control of being the price setter and doing the value adding, there's a lot to be said for it. It's just about finding the right product and then, yeah, not sort of taking you away from your core business too much or what your core values are, that then sucks all of your time out. So that's why the Airbnb's been so great for us, you know, because it really is an easy value add for us. I'm able to do the cleaning and it's here and it works, you know, and it's right on the farm. It's really quite hands-off in terms of engagement with the guests until I start doing more tours and the retreats and that kind of thing. But at the moment, it's been quite good for that. But, yeah, it's I mean, value-adding, I'm a big fan of value-adding, but I think you just got to be really careful that it doesn't, you know, cost a lot of money and a lot of time and then it doesn't sort of develop into what you want it to. But there's some great examples of people in the States and all sorts of things doing really well with value-adding. The other thing about value-adding, though, is you've got to decide if you're really willing to do all the social media and all that side of it as well, the marketing, and because it does take a lot of that. But, yeah, but it can be really worth it. You to find a place in the farm business too as a woman, like often because it's, you know, you might have that skill set and you might love marketing, you love the social media side of it. So it can be a really great way for you to find your place within the farm, so for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you've said that, because I know that a lot of the Ultimate Farm Wife community, when they've moved to the farm or when they've moved back into a family farming operation, part of their journey is finding, where do I fit, or is the farm ready for me? If they're not quite ready for me now, what can I do in the meantime, which is going to either value add to the farm, value add to myself personally, or how am I going to, you know, dedicate my time to, you know, maybe it's, you know, might be classified as an off-farm income or additional income that you can then spend on other projects in the farm, filter back into the farm or filter back into yourself, your family, and the kids just in the meantime as well. So whether we're looking at value-adding projects, it's always great to look at, you know, the future fit, but also what's great for the season that you're in now.
Yes, absolutely. That's exactly right. And yeah, and, you know, maybe it's like, well, it's not going to work now, but it will in the future. Mm. And I'm better off going and doing something else for a little while. But also, yeah, there can be some really great options, and it can work really well.
Yeah.
If it's your skill set and everything as well, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the other, you know, items I'd really love to talk about, which I love the idea of, and I would love to do something like this in the future for our farm as well, but you also hosted, was it a luncheon in the orchard? And I just thought the photos are beautiful. The way you did it was beautiful. I'd love to see, you know, more of that in the future. And I think that's something that I would like to do in the future here on farm as well, because we have a mixed orchard, which I've planted since I've got on farm. And I just think that I would, you know, I love those. I love feeding people. I love food. So I think it's an event that could value add to what we're doing here as well as what you've done there as well.
Oh, absolutely. So much fun doing those events. Like, you know, I mean, as we were talking about before we started recording, it can be a lot of work, but yeah, it's so fun. Like, I get a real buzz out of the energy around organizing the event and the coming together of it. And, you know, I'm so lucky we've got Steph that works with us, and she loves events as well, so we sort of bounce off each other, and she's very good at all the budgeting and the planning, where I'm more like the "Ooh, let's do this," so it works really well. And it was so fun, and people love it. And it is a great way to show people onto the farm and to, you know, we actually got mostly locals for our first event, but we were sort of hoping, and we hope to get people from further afield, because it's a great way to sort of showcase the farm, the local produce, and, yeah, invite people onto the farm. And it was great. We loved it. We didn't make a lot of money out of our first event though, Katja, so we've got to figure out how to not lose money. The other thing is, we had beautiful, like, local wines and beautiful natural wines and all that kind of stuff as well. It's so fun. I highly recommend doing them. And it's, yeah, it's a great way to bring everyone together. And I don't know about you, but I found, like, we're just not as social anymore. Since COVID, we don't do much. And I'm like, oh, it was so nice. And a day event, oh, so good. Highly recommend. Yeah.
What I've found talking to a lot of the community is they are sort of balancing up for them when they choose to go to an event, is, you know, am I supporting a community event? Will it be nice? Will I be fed? The niceties of a community event or something that's being put on, rather than being like, oh, it's another networking event. I don't think I want to do that. Whereas if it's somewhere that has, you know, the lovely combination of a local product being shown, spending time with people, I always find drink, like food and wine is always such a good combination, or some sort of drink is always just so lovely to be able to ease everyone into just catching up. And it's not something as formal once you sort of add the food element as well. It's like if they don't want to talk, they can just put something in their mouth.
Yeah, totally. And we did a farm tour. Tim took everyone on a farm tour beforehand, and you know, it was really just lovely, relaxed, and it's just a beautiful day. And yeah, it is. And there's no pressure. That's right. It's not come and, you know, you don't have to, cause networking events can be a bit like you've got to be on, you know. So whereas, yeah, it's just lovely.
Yeah, yeah. If you have moved to the farm for the first time, guys, and you are struggling to get your friends and family out to see where you are and see where you live, because I know a lot of the community have said, like, I've been on farm 5, 6, 10, 20 years and I still haven't had anyone come out to visit me. Putting on a value-added event like that, even if it is with friends and family and they're just helping, you know, pay for maybe some of the food and drink that you'll have at the farm, is also a great way to start with an event like that as well. They get to come out and see where you live, and it breaks down that barriers of, you know, distance or time or anything like that as well. So maybe something else to add just for a personal tip as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Katrina, it has been amazing to have you back on the podcast. I always love our interactions, love our chats, and I look forward to the next one. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks, Katja. Thank you so much for having me back on. I always love chatting with you as well. Thank you.
I'll stop.